If you negotiate with your knee before standing up, you're losing that argument. Joint Relief Institute treats joint pain fast. And yes, it's covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000 as in zero pain.
All right, let's get started. It's sponsored by JT Medicare Solutions. You turning 65, they'll get you started. And we'll start with Laura Ellis, and we'll talk about the residential and commercial real estate market. What can home buyers and sellers expect this year? This spring, we'll do that first on the Noon Business Lunch. Chief Strategy Officer and Executive Vice President and the President of Residential Sales at Baird & Warner. We're talking about the residential scene now. Laura, welcome to the show. How are you?
Hi, I'm well. Thank you for having me.
So the Super Bowl is in the rearview mirror, although I've had a lot of people like you tell me over the last couple of years that that really doesn't designate the start of the spring home selling season. Is there a start, and what do you think about that?
Well, historically, we do see a pretty good surge of activity right after the Super Bowl. It doesn't mean people haven't been engaged and looking and interested, but the Super Bowl does kick off the main showing season for us.
And we've got nice weather right now, too. That probably has something to do with it?
Without question, John. When the weather warms up, people, they're ready to get out and see what's out there.
What is out there right now in Chicago or Chicagoland?
So Chicagoland, contrary to most of the rest of the country, is one of the most competitive markets nationally. We still are suffering from a shortage of inventory available, and that makes the market very, very competitive. Still seeing very strong appreciation on our average sales price as well.
Yeah, right. So good for you if you are selling, although then you'll probably have to buy. But this is still, you would say, a seller's market here?
Absolutely. It's a supply and demand issue, and inventory continues to be very, very constrained. However, there's some good news for buyers out there. Interest rates have moderated. They've come down. About a year ago, they were hovering around 7%. Now they're in the 6 to 6.5 at the highest right now. Wage growth seems to be improving, which is outpacing appreciation nationally. So there's some bright spots for buyers today, too.
And I suppose whatever the home interest rate or cost is, at some point you got to move. Right? The kids are getting bigger, or you're new to the area, or you have to move to another location. Sometimes it would just seem to me like all of those people sitting on 3.5% mortgages at some point are going to have to get off the dime.
You're absolutely right, John. You hit the nail on the head with that. As time goes by, all of those life events happen, and that has always historically been the main driver of real estate decision making.
Is there a price point that's especially interesting to you right now that is more competitive or maybe easier to buy a house right now?
That's a really good question, but we're seeing it across all price points right now, including the luxury price point. Without question, however, the median average sales price, median or average sales price, I should say, in each market tends to be the hottest, whether that's North Shore or in the city or in the south suburbs.
Yeah.
Buyers also typically are looking for those move-in ready houses as well.
Well, what do you mean by that?
They don't want to have to do a lot of work. They want a house that is, you know, pretty close to ready for them to move in. People do expect to make their own personal changes, maybe a paint color here or there, but generally, they're not looking for rehab properties.
Right, right. Sure. But ready to move in, I guess the previous owner could have said, well, we were living there. You ought to be able to move in here. What are the fixes? What are the blemishes that you do not want to leave on your home if you're going to put it on the market?
Well, without question, it's paint carpet. That's probably the lowest cost, biggest impact to the house as far as value goes. Also, you know, it's a little more costly, but your kitchens, your bathroom renovations, those are what people expect today.
Yeah, sure. But doggone it. All right, so I'm going to list my house at $500,000. Well, to update the kitchen might cost me, just to update it might cost me $25,000, $50,000. Am I going to get that money back? You know, why am I leaving this for the next guy?
You actually will get the money back. We, you know, all our research has proven that over the years, that those investments will come back to you. If you're selling a home that needs work, or let's say that kitchen is dated and a buyer knows it's going to cost them $25,000 or $50,000, they're going to discount their offer. They're going to discount the price that they're willing to pay.
Laura Ellis is on the line, Chief Strategy Officer over at Baird Warner. She says that the market is heating up. It's actually been plenty warm in Chicago. We didn't have the up and down that they did in the South, right, Laura? So when the pandemic hit and everybody rushed to the South or got a bigger home, that elevated that market, and it's come down now, but we've been kind of steady. Is that true?
That's exactly right. I was just having a conversation this morning. I described our market as sort of the steady eddy. While we're appreciating in a strong way right now, we didn't have that crazy run-up that happened in 21, 22, in those COVID years.
Brian, you're on WGN Radio in Villa Park. Brian, what's your question? Hi. I don't hear Brian. Maybe you do. Hey, Brian, are you there? Let's try him one more time. Go ahead,
Hi.
Brian. There
yep.
you are.
Yep. Can you hear me? Hello?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. Okay, great. Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I have a question. You had early talked about people with the low interest rates who eventually are going to have to move.
Yeah.
Do we see an influx of people who are just deciding to add additions to their homes? It seems like a lot of people in my neighborhood who have smaller homes have been adding additions. And I was wondering if there are any stats on that.
Well, in other words, rather than go buy a bigger house, I'm going to put another bedroom on this one or build the office out. Is that what you're talking about, Brian?
Yes. Yes, correctly.
Yep. Yeah. Well, that's what happened in 2021. What's happening along those lines now, Laura?
That, in my opinion, has subsided in recent years. Huge flurry of it, like you said, John, in 20 and 21, as people really settled in or moved at that time. But we're not seeing a whole lot of it in recent year or two.
Yeah. Brian, thanks for the call. And by the way, depending on the circumstances, some of those people are being called back into the office anyway. So moving further out is more complicated, and the home office isn't as maybe necessary or as viable an option. You also said that if you wait for interest rates to come down, you may lose. What's the math on that, Laura?
Yeah, so when we have appreciation last year of 7 or 8% in the Chicagoland market, and you're buying a $500,000 house, then it is going to appreciate at that level. If you're waiting for a lower rate, the differential is just not there. You're going to lose out because you're going to pay more for the house later.
Oh.
So you're really better off making real estate decisions based on your lifestyle, what your needs are right now, if you find the right house, and then you simply refinance later if the rate should come down.
Right. So the $500,000 house is now $514,000. And now I'm going to go buy it, maybe with a 6% mortgage instead of a 7%. But how much have I saved since the house is more expensive now?
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. So what's the sweet spot then? You mentioned the North Shore and that area. I would imagine that's a million plus. But maybe if I'm in the southwest suburbs, am I looking at $400,000? What's the price range out there?
Yeah, well, so the average sales price for our company in Baird & Warner, we cover the entire Chicago metro area, is right around $500,000 right now. But yes, as you get in more outlying areas, the average price may be $350,000 or $400,000, and you get a terrific home. That, of course, is, you know, are you in commuting distance if you're going back into the office and so forth.
Yeah. One last question I'm wondering. All right, I wonder where the best value is. And I don't even know what that means, but maybe it does mean the most potential appreciation or the most square footage for your dollar, and it's a nice area. Do you think there's a little hidden gem, an area or some towns in the area that are maybe worth exploring for potential home buyers?
It's a really good question, John. There's so many wonderful communities, and, you know, Chicago, of course, itself has so much to offer. It's so uniquely different for every single buyer out there, what's important to them, how far they have to commute. My advice to people who are thinking along those lines is find a great real estate agent that they feel really comfortable with, and they're going to advise them appropriately. I can think of wonderful communities in the North Shore, in the Northwest, in the Southwest. There's just the whole Chicagoland metropolitan area has so much to offer so many people. The challenge in real estate is that everybody's situation is so unique that it would be hard for me to just say, hey, go out to Naperville or go out to Aurora. It's just really tough.
Yeah. Well, Naperville has been a gem for a lot of people, although I think Naperville is almost too much for some folks, so maybe that's not your cup of tea. I was talking to Dennis Rodkin, the real estate writer from Cranes yesterday or 2 days ago, and we were just talking a little bit about what are the features that are especially attractive to home buyers. Like, once upon a time, it was a home theater, especially again during the pandemic. I would guess that's a little out of vogue right now. Is it a home gym? Is it a home office? What would really be attractive to me would be the indoor-outdoor kitchen, but maybe in 5 years, that's going to be passe. But can you just talk about that? What special features in homes are especially popular or feel a little dated right now?
Yeah, absolutely. So in demand right now really is the home office. Even for people who are back in the office, many are working 1 or 2 days from home. So the home office is very important. Home gyms the demand for that has sustained because, you know, we're so much more focused on our health and well-being today. So those two things are very important. We have also, to your point, John, seen a huge surge in that indoor-outdoor living, those beautiful backyards. We'll have to see if that is as important 3 or 5 years from now as it is today, but that trend seems to remain strong as well.
What about a swimming pool?
Swimming pools became very hot during the pandemic when, you know, people wanted them and were choosing homes that had them over homes that didn't, which was the absolute reverse for 20 years before that. It's been kind of quiet, so we're going to have to see moving forward if that remains to be a demand. My opinion and my thought, which may or may not be right, is that it will go back to the way that it was and that swimming pools may not have the attraction that they did during the COVID year.
Well, it eats up a lot of your property. It's a maintenance thing. And some people just either don't want it or they've got kids who want it, but that scares them. So you do really eliminate a lot of potential buyers when they see even a house with a nice pool, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. And then what about the home theater? Is that a feature that is neutral to you, a plus or a minus?
I think it's neutral. Again, my opinion, it may vary from area to area, but it's really a neutral. I think for a lot of buyers, that would be a nice to have. But I don't think it's anything that people are necessarily setting out on their home search saying, I have to have it.
Are people writing letters to the potential, are potential buyers writing letters to the sellers or gifting them the way we heard about a few years ago?
They are. We try to discourage that for a number of reasons, but with the market so competitive, if a client wants to write a letter and wants us to submit it, by all means, we will do that per their direction.
Yeah. I wonder if that doesn't open up a possibility of somebody saying I was discriminated against for whatever reason.
Sorry. And that's why we are very careful and we try to steer away from that in most cases.
Yeah. Yeah, interesting. Lots to think about there. Laura Ellis is the Chief Strategy Officer, the Executive Vice President, and the President of Residential Sales at Baird Warner. Just like it sounds, BairdWarner.com. Nice to talk to you today, Laura. Thanks for your help.
Thank you for having me, John.
Okay, let's invite Emily Stewart back onto the show, a senior correspondent at Business Insider. She talks to us about various topics and trends in the business world. This time it's the corporate wellness boom. Emily, welcome back to the show. How are you doing?
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
But the first part of that sentence is, RIP to the corporate wellness boom. What was the wellness boom before we get to what happened? What were we talking about there?
Yeah, so think back to like the 2010s and millennials, and this whole talk about like millennials really value work-life balance, right? And certainly Gen Z does as well. A lot of people do. So there was this real push from companies to kind of get into that and say like, okay, how do we offer services that are going to appeal to people? So that might be, you know, a gym benefit or mental health benefits or financial coaching, things like that. Then the pandemic hits in 2020, and a lot of companies really did invest quite a bit of money for, you know, some pretty obvious reasons. Everybody's sitting at home. They're worried their employees are not doing well. So they start to, you know, focus on some products for like stress management, things like that. And then also, you know, post-pandemic, the labor market got really tight and really competitive. And so a lot of companies kind of look at these perks and benefits as a way to compete for workers. Now, I mean, is somebody going to say, well, I will stay at my job because of a gym perk? No, but it helps. So we really did see a lot of companies spending a lot of money on this. You know, there was a lot of money to be spent. And so a lot of companies really did. I think a lot of people who work in kind of, you know, white collar jobs at least are at least somewhat aware that their company probably does have some suite of wellness benefits for them.
Yeah. And it might be a workout facility in the building, the 303 East Wacker, where WGN Radio is housed. On the top floor is a workout facility. It's not a lot to write home about, but if you wanted to work out in the office, you could. And this shows you how much I know about that. I don't know if it has a shower facility or not, but I presume there'd be some way to then be able to come back down to work clean. And then other places had off-site, so they would give you gym membership. One of the ways they monitored that, like it might have been for health insurance costs, would be we want you to go out and work out and stay healthy. And the way they would monitor it is how often does your card get swiped at the gym, mm-hmm. and they can get a report on that. Some people would go swipe the card and not work out, though, but you know that was the hack. But I guess that was just one example of what you're talking about, right?
Yeah, I mean, all sorts of things like that where, you know, your company gives you, like you said, like a gym discount or a benefit or, you know, a mental health app. I know at my old job, you know, when there would be layoffs, for example, the company would say, well, don't forget we have the mental health app. And, like, I don't know, is anybody using it? But plenty of companies do this. And like you said, you know, there often is an insurance benefit to this. You know, also, if you think you have a healthier workforce, those are people going to have fewer medical claims who are going to show up to work more. And so that is, you know, better for your insurance costs and also just for your workforce overall is kind of the thinking.
So what's happened of late?
I mean, I think a lot of companies did spend quite a bit of money on this. And it doesn't mean that these companies are cutting benefits altogether, but they're kind of taking stock of what they've spent on. Data that I got from Ramp Capital shows that the companies that use their expense management platform have reduced wellness benefits per employee by about $250 each year. And so that's that company or people are going to kind of cheaper gyms. So maybe instead of going to Equinox, they're hitting up a Planet Fitness, things like that. And companies are just kind of taking a look and saying, you know, are people using these benefits? I think most people who have a job where they offer some sort of benefits, like, are not super aware what exactly is available. You know, someone says like 2/3 of employees don't really know what's around and what's useful. And so companies kind of are looking and saying, you know, hey, if we're spending all of this money on XYZ program, if 20% of our workforce is using it, like, is this actually a useful benefit, especially in a moment when health insurance premiums are going up and companies are looking to cut costs? And if wellness benefits fall in the optional category. And so if it's, how are we going to pay for our insurance premiums this year? Hey, we are paying for this new financial counseling service that not a single person has downloaded. Maybe it's time to think about that.
Yeah. I think the mental health apps are nice for the people that make mental health apps. And they may be helpful to some people, but if that's the benefit, I'm like, I'll just take a turkey at Christmas. Thank you. But I think one last thing is this power dynamic isn't exactly the way to describe it, but I think all of the, you know, the leverage was with the employer. Then the pandemic hit and it was clearly with the employee. And then as they were trying to persuade them back, the offers got pretty good. But I think now employers are like, you know what, skip it. If you don't want to work for us, we'll find somebody else. And in fact, we're not even going to give you the gym, or we're not going to buy lunch every day or whatever. And I wonder what this is to me, the big question about all of this is, what is a reasonable ask from both sides? What's reasonable to expect employers to do for you, and employers, what's reasonable to expect employees to do, like get in your car and drive to work every day, or work sometimes from home after hours? What's the balance? And I don't know that we figured that out right now.
Yeah, I think that's the hard part. I mean, you know, you bring this up, and I remember during pretty soon after the pandemic was, you know, kind of starting around like back to work orders, a friend of mine, her job began trying to get them back in the office, and at some point decided, well, maybe we'll offer a massage one day a week, and that will get people in. Yeah. And I do not think that they're offering massages anymore. Yeah. I think now it's more, you know, butt in seat, or you don't have a job anymore. But I do think this is kind of the big question. And I thought about this a lot kind of during the pandemic, and especially in the immediate kind of aftermath, and people were saying, oh, workers have all this power and work has completely changed. And like you said, it really is power dynamics. And I think what we are seeing now is that a lot of things that we thought had changed forever really were changes of circumstance. And it is a tough thing to think about, you know, like, is being in the office 5 days a week, like, is that reasonable? We did that forever. At the same time, we've learned that a lot of people work just fine from home, or work fine from home some days. You know, are these gym benefits? Yes, they are nice, but I think kind of for me personally, the way I've always thought about it is like, I would love the gym benefit, but also if it is that or layoff, I'm fine. I'll pay for the gym by myself and learn how to run outside.
Yeah, right. As someone somewhere listening to this conversation right now is doing their Don Draper, that's what the money's for. I mean, you know, here's the deal. We give you money, you work. That's the end of the obligation. That's the end of the expectation. You can, though, see where the score on all of this is from businessinsider.com. It's always nice to talk to you. Thanks for giving us some of your insight today.
Thank you. Have a good weekend.
All right. This is the Noon Business Lunch on WGN. Let's visit with Landis Beverly, the general manager of Cache 310. Is that the best way to pronounce it, Landis? Welcome to the show.
Hi, well, thank you very much for having me. Yes, that would be the best way to pronounce it. Cache 310 is correct.
C-A-C-H-E with the accent over there, 310. A hidden red-lit cocktail lounge in the West Loop Gate area, inspired by, I'm reading now, the shadowy back rooms and artistic nightlife of the 1920s Montmartre. So this is a new bar in an old location that you all have renovated, and it opens up today, is that right? Or tomorrow?
It opens up tomorrow for Valentine's Day. We figured that with the red bar, it was a perfect theme to be opening up right then. It was a pretty quick turnaround on the renovations. We closed the previous down around December 19th and back up and running less than 2 months.
Yeah. So this isn't a pop-up. This is a permanent location. You guys are going to be there for the duration, right?
Yes. So open Monday through Saturday, a little bit later on the Friday and Saturday nights, but then it's going to be open all week.
Describe the room for me a little bit. What have you done?
The room, we've added a red carpet that goes all the way throughout the whole space. Wood paneling across the walls with a nice and deep stain. Added a lot of vintage mirrors that create more of a, as we talked about, the 1920s-esque. With that, we've also done a lot more just for the cocktails and food menu. It's a really small space, so we've had to really work with what we've got, and we've tried to design everything to fit within that space and be able to execute it well.
I'm looking at a picture of it, and I've read about it. It does seem to, even in a small picture, evoke a certain mood. Is it kind of dark room? To describe the lighting and the theme there.
The room is dark lit, candles on every table. We have lamps, attached to the bar throughout. They're dimly lit. But it's going to be very dimly lit, kind of creating that mood of just discovery and conversation. It's something you want to go out and find, and once you're there, you're going to want to sit there for a few hours.
And then 12 big TVs drop down with sports 24/7, right?
No, not at all. We had originally talked about going with TVs, but we steered away from that option. I think we'd done too much good work in there, and that would just kind of ruin everything we've done with the certain vibe and how we've created that space.
Imagine that. I mean, that's confidence. That's like, and you know, I'm pulling your leg about that. But it is kind of a pet peeve of mine when the TV is the centerpiece of a place. Sometimes it's exactly what you're there for, but wouldn't it be nice if there was an oasis from that? And that's a different kind of vibe, isn't it?
Yes. If you go into a place with a TV, no matter who's sitting in the chair facing in front of it, you're going to look up at it at some point, no matter what's on it. And it's also, it's a debate of what do you put on it. Everyone in Chicago, you know, they're going to watch Chicago sports, but it's not going around year round. We get to a point where it's just going to be on as whatever's, you know, the news. And we don't need that to be infiltrating this beautiful space we've created.
We'll stop talking about that, but I'm just so with you on that. It's like, hey, if you've got Fox News on, I don't want that. If you've got MSNBC on, somebody doesn't want that. CNN, I don't want that. I don't even want to see anything about any of that. And it really ticks me off when the Bears or Cubs are playing and they don't even think to put that on. So let's just eliminate that problem entirely. You'll have small plates for food, right?
Yes. The menu is very much small plates, designed to be something before dinner or after dinner. It's not going to spoil what you're going to have either, like before or after. I really enjoy what we've done with our tin fish program. We've really tried to lean into that because it's, you know, space effective for the small kitchen, and it's working with our same ingredients that we, you know, use from Canal Street. So we've got our still amazing sourdough, our Parker House rolls, great bread coming from our bakery. But then with the other things, we go with that spread. You have this egg jam, which is almost like the yolk of a sunny side egg. Mix that with a little bit of our cherry pepper relish, get some spice, add some pickled onions, and you've got a perfect little bite.
What's the cocktail you really like there?
I'm really enjoying the Balenciaga right now. The Balenciaga is really simple. It's Liquor 43, which is a Spanish vanilla liqueur, and we've infused it with cloves. So you get a little bit of that vanilla, a little bit of cloves to get a little spice on the back end. And then over top of that, you pour it with sparkling wine. So you get the dryness of the wine, and then you get that mixed in. Being someone who appreciates wine, I think it's a beautiful cocktail, so that if you go out to a cocktail bar, you're not feeling like, oh, I'm just going to get wine. I'm still a part of the experience of the cocktails.
Old fashions have enjoyed a renaissance of late. I suppose you'll have one of those on the menu?
Sorry, repeat that part again.
Old fashions, they seem to be yes. popular these days.
So our old fashioned is going to be inspired by New Orleans, a little bit of French take with it. So it's going to be a kind of a blend between a Sazerac and an old fashioned. Going to have that rye whiskey that has that bite, but it's not going to be as much as what you'd expect from just a Sazerac or old fashioned. I think it's a perfect marrying of both of them.
I think the Sazerac is a nice cocktail, but boy, is it easy to get that one wrong. So
yes, it is.
Well, okay. So what's the address again? One more time.
So it's going to be at 310 Canal Street. We're right by the green at 320. If you're going to come through, please stop at Canal Street as well. Grab some dinner on the Italian side and then go over to the French to have a little bit of a cocktail to end your night. You've got the park here, so when it gets a little bit warmer and the grass turns green again, it's going to be beautiful out here on the patio as well.
Have a great run, Landis. Good luck to you. Cache 310. Good luck.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Have a good day.